Welcome back to the Student Paramedic Podcast Pediatric Mini-Series. Hey team, welcome back to the Student Paramedic Podcast Pediatric Mini-Series with Dr. Andy Tagg. Thanks for jumping on, Andy.
Lovely to see you again, Alex.
Lovely to see you again. So today we are on our final episode, unless we figure out along the way that there's some more topics to...
Yeah, we'll wait and see what your listeners have to say. They might want us to do some more.
Absolutely. So today we're going to go through adolescent mental health. And this was a topic that you brought up to me, Andy, and I thought it was a really great suggestion, because mental health is obviously, as we know, when we're working on the road, we go to a lot of people who experience mental health crises, but we don't really necessarily think about adolescent mental health. And I feel like that would be a really challenging job to go to. I think some of the jobs that I have gone to that have been sort of adolescent mental health crises and things like that, it has been really difficult. So do you want to introduce the topic a little bit more, Andy, and sort of your experience with it, and how does it differ, I guess, from adults?
So I think what you're saying really is that, you know, adolescent and young adult mental health problems are really, really common. You know, 1 in 10 adolescents have self-harmed at some point, cut themselves. 1 in 13, so around 7.5%, have thought about suicide seriously. And 1 in 20 young people have actually made a plan to kill themselves. It's a huge burden on the healthcare system. And we've certainly seen an increase in adolescent young people coming into emergency departments with mental health crisis since the COVID pandemic. And part of that may be related to a loss of connection with community, a little bit of isolation, and just obviously the burdens of, you know, what, when we were in lockdown and we just couldn't get out and see people and do stuff. And that's just really changed things. And so it's really, really common. And so you are going to go and see an adolescent or young person with a mental health crisis. And the spectrum changes from someone who's actively suicidal to someone who's having just a really bad day to someone who's, you know, had an argument with their partner or their parent. They can all spark things off. And we're often not great at dealing with them as healthcare professionals. And I think there is two aspects when we're dealing with with a lot of these young people. First of all, there's that potential medical problem. So they cut themselves, you see blood, you want to fix the cut, and you focus on that because that's the easy thing to fix. Someone's taken an overdose of something, great. You focus on, you know, what are my potential antidotes? What's my treatments for my poisons? And forget about the underlying cause. And if you're only dealing with the superficial symptoms of a mental health challenge, then you're going to miss the bigger picture. And it's not your job in the pre-hospital space to go and find a deep dive into the trauma history of, you know, a young person who may have been abused or maybe having, you know, challenges at school. That's not your job. Your job there really in the pre-hospital space is to sit there without judgment as much as possible. And that can be really hard sometimes if a patient's got borderline personality disorder and this is the fifth time they've called an ambulance out in the last month for cutting. It can be really hard, but it's to sit there without judgment and listen. And I think sometimes people need that dose of compassion to really just to make life a little bit easier for them. You know, we in hospital routinely get fixated again, just like you do in the pre-hospital space, around that sort of the medical aspects of what's going on rather than dealing with the thinking thing aspects and the feelings, because feelings are hard to fix. And because if they were easy, God, we'd all just take that one magic pill, wouldn't we, and just wake up happy every day.
Absolutely. The prevalence definitely seems to be getting higher, at least from sort of that first-hand experience of being on the road. So because it's starting to increase, how do we go about assessing or screening adolescents for their mental health? Because this was something that I didn't necessarily get taught at university. And if it was, it was probably a very small part of it, at least when I went through. So it's one of those things that I found that definitely need to just pick up on the go and research now and make it as part of my CPD going forward and as part of my professional development. But when you mentioned this topic of talking about adolescent mental health, you mentioned that you guys have the HEADS tool, which is available on Don't Forget the Bubbles. And so obviously I read up on that before we had this chat. And it's a really great screening tool and something that I've reflected on and now try to utilize for my CPD. But do you want to go through why or how we should screen and assess adolescent mental health and the importance of this HEADS tool?
So I think the HEADS tool is a really useful tool to be able to start having a conversation with a young person as to what's going on in their lives. And sometimes it's not useful for more than just mental health concerns. It might be useful for some of the physical problems as well, which may actually just be physical manifestations of sort of psychosocial, psychic distress. You know, you'll often see kids around exam times with headaches and belly pain. And actually, there's not a physical cause. It's a mental cause for those sort of things. So the head screen is really a series of subheadings, ideas to talk about. And, you know, when you get a mnemonic with a tool, you think, okay, I've got to run from first letter H all the way through down to S and just do them in order and ask the specific questions. And really, it's just part of having a conversation and give you some things to think about. So if we run through the HEADS tool, and I'll give you a sense of really some of the things we're talking about. So H, the first H is for home and home life. And we often make assumptions that parents live with a mum and dad. And that's not always the case. You know, it's much better to ask open-ended questions rather than closed questions. And if I say, you know, tell me a bit about your mum and dad, that's going to be a very different response to who do you live with? Who lives there with you? What are things like at home? What are the rules like at home? You know, I'm going to get a much better sense of what someone's home life is from asking those questions, because I'm sure most teenagers and young people are very good at giving monosyllabic, one word, okay, fine, answers, you know, as opposed to asking them a specific question that you can't respond that way. So if you say, you know, who lives at home with you, you're going to find out a little bit, you know, actually, I live with my mum and her new partner, or and my stepbrother and my half brother, my granny, that sort of thing. I love the sort of questions that get to the root of who someone is. So, you know, what are the rules like at home? Who do you argue with the most? And, you know, it's you're going to get a much better sense as to what's going on in the home environment. The E stands for education or employment, depending on what's going on and how old this kid. So rather than assuming that every child, young person you see is in school, I think the first question to ask is, are you in school? Does school feel like a safe place for you? Because some people, you'll find that school is their safe place because something is happening at home. For others, school is their dangerous place because they're being bullied or abused in school. And so you can get a sense of, does school feel like a safe space? Have you ever been bullied at school? What do you like at school? What are you good at? And these things, as questions, will then increase your rapport, allow a conversation to happen. You know, and rather than having a checklist of, okay, tick, 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 asking these questions, it's really just having a conversation and having some ideas as to what's going on and using non-judgmental language and open language. So we've done H for home, E for education or employment. And then there's a second E because, you know, in medical mnemonics, we can't spell things normally. And that's for eating and exercise, because, you know, we could do a whole podcast on eating disorders in young people. Maybe we'll do that in the future. But we know that adolescence is a time of concern around what your body looks like. And there's an increased prevalence of body dysmorphia in men as well as in young women. So rather than saying, you know, what do you eat? Because you're going to get a very boring, bland answer. Do you ever worry about the shape of your body or your weight? Has anyone ever spoken to you about your size or your body? What do you not like about yourself or your body? And that's a great question, because everyone will come up with something, even if it's just the size of their ears or the size of their nostrils. Have you ever made yourself throw up to try and lose weight? Have you ever done exercise to try and lose weight? Because although, you know, when we think about mental health crisis in young people, we think often about self-harm and sort of injurious behavior. you also got to think that eating disorders is one of the commonest cause of, you know, harm in young people that may lead to death. Certainly. So we've talked about home, education, eating and exercise, and then we're getting on for A, and our head screens for activities. And so those are the things that people do that aren't paid employment, then they're not education. You know, what do you do for fun? What do you do with your free time? What do you do with your friends? And you may find that what someone does for fun is spend their entire night coming home from school playing, you know, Call of Duty or Minecraft on their computer and not talking to someone. Or what they do for fun is actually going out playing local school cricket with the local team, or soccer with the local soccer team. And those are different types of people, and you'll get a sense of who they are. You know, what's your favorite TV program? What TV do you watch? When do you watch it? Where do you watch it? What's your favorite show? And then normalizing behavior. Some teenagers spend a lot of their free time online. What do you use the internet for? Are they using it? And then, you know, again, being open-minded, normalizing that a lot of teenagers, you know, spend their time online. A lot of teenagers watch, you know, TV. A lot of teenagers like using, you know, playing on computer games. What's your favorite computer game? You know, the child that plays Animal Crossing is going to be very different from the one that plays Fortnite, for example. You know, you're going to get a much better sense of what's going on. So we've had home, education, eating and exercise, activities. And then D in our head screen is drugs, things that our parents always worry about and tell us about. And, you know, you could go in there and heavy handed and say, hey, what drugs do you take? You're really not going to get a reasonable answer. And because the drugs that the children took that when I was a kid are very different from the sort of drugs that people are now. So perhaps rather than shaming someone and saying, hey, you know, what drugs have you been taking? What kind of drugs have you seen around? That allows them to say they've seen people taking GHB, they've seen people having marijuana or ecstasy, but not admitting to it. Many young people, lots of people your age, have experimented or tried drinks or drugs. Have your friends ever tried them? Again, not getting them in trouble. What have you tried? And then you can get a sense of what's going on. Again, you're normalizing things that's going on. And, you know, Ron saying, you know, how many cigarettes do you smoke a day? Which is, you know, is a very common medical question that I was taught to ask. And I can't really, it's a lot harder to deal with now that everyone's vaping rather than, you know, smoking cigarettes. Just normalizing these sort of behaviors. A lot of kids your age, you know, use vapes. Do any of your friends use vapes? That's your first question. Have you ever tried it? How often? You know, that way you're going to get a much better sense of what's going on. So home, education and employment, eating and exercise, activities, drugs. And then we've got a few S's on the end just to turn. And every single time I do a talk about the head screen, it's that S, the number of S's seems to expand exponentially every time. So the next S is for sex. And this is where it can get tricky, because this may not be a subject that you feel comfortable talking with yourself, and we often don't feel comfortable. And if you're embarrassed about talking about it, how can you expect your patients to want to be able to talk about it in front of you? And so rather than assuming that everyone's in a cis-hetero relationship, which is what would happen in my generation when I was taught, it'd be much better to say, hey, have you ever been involved in a romantic relationship? Who with? Do you like boys or girls? That's okay. And be honest, say, you know, how do you see yourself in terms of sexual preference? Are you interested in boys or girls? Well, you're not sure. And then my favorite question, and this is, have you ever had an experience in the past that you didn't feel comfortable with? Because we know that the age of first intercourse in young people is dropping. And certainly in Australia, you know, there's a large number of children, and I'm calling them children, you know, the 14-year-olds who've, you know, lost their virginity and had sex. And most of that, majority of the time they've had sex, it's been coerced and alcohol has been involved. And they feel ashamed of what's happened. And that can be the inciting incident for their mental health crisis they've had. So, home life, education and employment, eating and exercise, activities, drugs, sex, and then really the last couple of things go together, that's suicidality and safety. And I think one of the challenges is we worry that by asking about if someone is suicidal, it's going to make them do something. But that's like saying, you know, asking someone if they're having sex is going to make them pregnant. It's not going to happen, you know. So rather than, you know, jump in there saying, hey, have you ever thought about killing yourself? Do you ever feel stressed or anxious? Well, the answer for that, for everyone, I imagine, is yes. Do you ever feel sad or down more than usual? Absolutely. Have you ever thought about hurting yourself? Yes. What have you thought about doing? When does this happen? What is making you think like this? You know, are there any particular triggers that set you off? And then we're going to think about the sort of safety questions. You know, have you ever deliberately hurt yourself? Have you ever put yourself in an unsafe situation? And those unsafe situations you think of, well, we think about simple things like, you know, drinking and drugs, but sometimes that's actually risky driving, you know, jumping in the car with mates or having unsafe sex, that kind of thing. For some people, it's actually joining a gang. You know, that's putting themselves in an unsafe situation. And if you are spend your time practicing and asking these questions, you'll get some really interesting answers. But most importantly, what you're doing is in establishing a rapport with your patient. They may then be more willing to trust you and talk to you about what's going on. And depending on how you get on with them, that therapeutic relationship can make life so much easier for you. Now, that's really hard to have these sort of conversations. And it's really hard in the back of a moving vehicle. And it's completely inappropriate to have those conversations in front of parents and, you know, bystanders, because we want to create a safe, confidential space. But it may be that you're in the back of the ambulance with a person who's cut their wrists and their parents are following on in the car. And this is the best opportunity you have to, you know, hold their hand, listen without judgment. And they may have hurt themselves for something that you think is the most ridiculous, trivial reason, because they've been told to do the washing up and they've refused and the parents have shouted at them. But this is the thing that's flipped them on the edge. And then you just sit there and empathize.
That's a fantastic tool, to be fair, in terms of breaking it down and giving some structure to knowing what to ask. And I love those questions, like you mentioned, they're not the closed yes and no monosyllabic sort of kind of answers that you do get, but you get the full sort of picture. And I think I never learned this prior to obviously researching this to chatting with you about it and everything. So I feel like this is something that I'll definitely take into my practice, because you definitely get a lot more information. Just, you know, you talking about that, then there's, you know, you just talking about the screening tool and what components it takes. It's quite in depth and there's a lot of information that can be gained from it. And I think this is a perfect opportunity, I guess, in adolescence to either pick up on some things and then hand those over to hospital and hopefully get these patients some appropriate help.
Your aim isn't to be able to fix. This is not a therapeutic conversation. It's an information gathering information. Because if you set up the patient up by having a great rapport and making them feel comfortable opening up before they even get to hospital, then when they're getting somewhere, they may want to speak to, you know, the psychiatrist or the mental health professionals in the hospital. They're more inclined to be able to do that. And sometimes also what you're doing is priming them with information. You're saying, okay, I know they're going to ask these questions next. I've already shared this. I can then move on and answer them their questions.
Absolutely. I guess it's that primer as well for that patient there. They're sort of experiencing that, oh, wow, like someone is actually asking these questions and I have the opportunity to be open about it and, you know, then hopefully be able to provide some more information going forward as well. So hopefully not being sort of that taboo sort of topic that might be really, really crucial and important to them that they can't open up about. So it's a really great screening tool, to be fair. I was going to ask in terms of the communication tips, but I feel like what we've done is, you know, as you've mentioned, everything's in terms of that sort of non-judgmental approach, really open and honest and just having that active listening of encouraging the patient to talk about what it is that they want to talk about and using the head screening tool, so those prompts as well. What about those people that are engaging in sort of drug and substance use that you do need to sort of safeguard or do a bit more about or sort of gather a bit more information about?
So I think, you know, we all often do see children and young people that have brought in, have had taken some risky behavior. They've taken drugs, they of unknown sorts, they've, you know, been drinking. And again, all we, our role then really is, first of all, is to make sure they're medically safe before we deal with the underlying causes. And some things, as I said at the start, we cannot fix. You know, we can't fix someone's home life very easily. We can't fix what's happening for them at school. All we can do is look after them in that acute medical emergency that they've often called with. And it may be that you've been, you know, called to the shopping center, someone's behaving erratically, and, you know, it's apparent to you, certainly they've taken, they're intoxicated with drugs and or alcohol. Your job then is, first of all, to make sure that you're safe and the bystander is safe and that patient is safe, and use your best verbal de-escalation skills possible to try and get them to calm down and come with you. And sometimes we have to be a little more aggressive than we would like. And some people in these situations require stricter, more firm boundaries when it comes to language. And often it's around that sort of setting boundaries. If you do this, then we will have to do that. Because at the end of the day, your job is to make sure this person is safe.
Absolutely. That's a really good point. Everything, I guess, is that safety. And sometimes it can feel really difficult, especially in those kinds of jobs, whether it be for an adult or for a pediatric / adolescent or young person. So realize, like, the HEADS tool is a fantastic tool that, you know, like we've said, gives us a great basis in terms of talking to our patients about what's going on. In regards to, we've gone through the prevalence. We're not, I guess, going through the ins and outs of each type of mental health crises or sort of mental health condition that may occur. What would be sort of like your, I guess, final insight into approaching young people with sort of mental health crises and assessing them?
I think they can be incredibly challenging patients to look after. More so the patients that have repeated mental health crises and may have something like a borderline personality disorder in the making. Those patients who come in and who take an overdose every single week or cutting themselves every single week, they can be really hard to deal with because you feel as if it's something personal against you, the healthcare provider, they're doing this to you. They're not. They're doing, this is a manifestation of their, whatever's going on in their stressful life response. And seeing every opportunity that someone calls for help, that's exactly what they're doing. They're asking for help. And this is a chance for that one intervention. And, you know, we said at the start that a large proportion of young people have thought about hurting themselves. And often, you know, we as healthcare providers at that pointy end are the people who are stopping them doing by just listening. You know, if 1 in 13, 7.5% of young people have strongly considered suicide, then maybe the thing that turns them around is someone listening to them and validating them and making them feel heard because they weren't at home.
That's an incredibly powerful statement to end it on. And I really love everything that you've gone through on this pediatric mini series, Andy. I really can't thank you enough for taking the time out of your busy schedule to do this full mini series with us. It's really incredible. So thank you so much. I hope our listeners have learned something. I know that I've definitely taken a lot away from this mini series. It doesn't matter if you're a student, you're a newly qualified paramedic, if you're a seasoned paramedic, there's always something there for you to learn. So, Andy, thank you so much for jumping on. And I will put all of the links into the show notes for everyone. So thank you very much.
100%, Alex. And I'd just like to remind the listeners really that we've got a lot of pediatric topics on www.don'tforgetthebubbles.com. You'll find lots of information on there. And if you think that we need more, you know, pre-hospital content, we'd really love you to have you all involved. So just reach out to me.
Thanks for listening to the pediatric mini-series with Dr. Andy Tagg, creator of Don't Forget the Bubbles. If you have enjoyed this mini-series, please reach out to us either through the Student Paramedic Podcast at gmail.com or via the Student Paramedic Podcast on Instagram or Facebook. We'd really appreciate if you reached out to us and gave us feedback. It really does help. And if you've got any future content ideas or anything you want to hear about, please let us know.